So, a great Vaishnava is not surrounded by people who flatter him. In fact, he finds that distinctly uncomfortable. But occasionally, he allows his confidential associates to describe his contribution to the teaching and practice and spreading of Krishna consciousness. These three things constitute an acharya: to understand the Vedas, well, to know them, first of all. Guru means to teach, and achar means to flow like a stream within a boundary. It's like a stream flows, or a person walks a path. So achar. So achar means to keep within the banks, to flow like a river, to go, to walk. So an acharya is one who walks within the strict rules set by his predecessor, his own preceptor, who walks the rules set by his own preceptor. And in effect, he is then a lineage holder. He keeps the understanding of the Vedas. Each branch has an understanding of the Vedas. And in fact, Śrīla Vyāsadeva gave different branches of the Vedas to different groups of disciples. So Śrīla Vyāsadeva is responsible for all these different groups. Having different groups is no problem for us, actually. It was the way that something is passed on. But there comes time to unify all the different groups, especially when the world is in danger. Just recently we had one of these wonderful cruise ships came too close to the shore. Do you remember? And we had the scene of people trying to get off the ship, and someone had a camera in their hands, as they do these days. Wherever you go, people have, you know, video cameras in their hands. And a lady who was in charge of the passengers, some sort of customer relations lady, she's saying, "It's all right, there is no problem, it's just an electrical fault." Now, whether she knew what it was or whether she didn't, it was a lie. It was an untruth. So when there's great danger, there's no room for lies. Even if the truth is unpalatable, a person who wants to be a leader has to tell the truth. So we are in a situation of a sinking ship, all of us. Hate to say it, but we are. This body, our ship that's taking us through life, is sinking. You know, it's sinking. It's been sinking for as many years as you've been alive. So if you're only 22, the ship of your body is sinking for 22 years. Now you may say, "Oh God, this is another Creeper Moya class where he's so pessimistic. You know, why doesn't he tell us something interesting and something which will uplift us? Why does he start with something so pessimistic?" Well, first, in Vedic culture, first comes the bad news. The bad news is that the ship is sinking, but there'll be another ship along very soon. And you'll get on board that one, and then you can enjoy. And unfortunately, all that happens is that each time you change ships, you end up in the drink, and you get rather cold. So to try to rearrange your life in any particular way, this is not very sensible when the ship is sinking. So therefore, the first thing we understand, in order that all the different elements of the Vedic cultural system, such as wonderful schools and wonderful social organization and uncorrupt politicians and people who are nice to each other, and wars that are fought only between people who want to fight them, who are kshatriyas. You know, even the Vedas can tell us that if there has to be a war, this is how you do it. Okay? You know, not that 85, 90% of the people from any war zone are civilians. No, in the Battle of Kurukshetra, what was the percentage of civilians that were collateral damage? I'll tell you, a big zero. Nobody got injured. No civilians were injured in the making of this war. Okay? Battle of Kurukshetra, no civilians. Only people who chose to fight. Okay? And where did it take place? Well, it took place on a big plain outside, where, you know, it was a big flat plain. So only the people who wanted to be there were there. Now people can't even fight a war according to the Vedas. Now everybody gets killed. What a foolish thing to have a war to protect people and everybody gets killed. Even when someone says, don't worry, we're coming to save you. We have a big army. We have jets. We'll come and save you. And then you wipe out hundreds of thousands of them, of civilians in the process. It's madness. This is Kali Yuga madness. So if you want even just to have a good war, a just war, you turn to the Vedas. So the Vedas starts with the bad news. The bad news is, I'm sorry, but sometimes there will be war. And this is something we have. But if you're going to have a war, do it in this way. Okay, people will get hurt, but less people will get hurt. The ship is sinking, but don't worry. There is a better way. Okay? The body is subject to all sorts of temptations, but don't worry. We have a way to minimize lust, greed, anger, avarice, madness, illusion, sleep, all these things. It's called yoga. And if you mix that in with good principles of social organization, we can help you. We can help you. The Vedas can help you. So a Vaishnav Thakur is someone who manages to help a rather lot of people during his lifetime. And why does he do that? Well, he knows the Vedas. He speaks the Vedas. He manages to get other people to follow the Vedas. And those people are able to teach the Vedas to others so that they also walk the same path. That's Acharya. So when someone does that, he's known as an Acharya and it succeeds different generations. So then he gets nice verses written about him. Yeah, we came back to the point here. So we say, this first verse, I offer my respectful obeisances. We can all shout out loud. Unto his divine grace,
grace.
Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, who is very dear to Lord Krishna, having taken shelter at his lotus feet. And the next verse, beginning with Sri Barshabhanavi Devi. When he was initiated, he was given this name. Barshabhanavi means the daughter of Vrishabhanu, name of Radharani. And because she's a goddess, Radharani, she's Barshabhanavi Devi, and Daitaya, and the servant of the lover of Srimati Radharani. I offer my respectful obeisances to Sri Barshabhanavi Devi Daita Das, who is favored by Srimati Radharani, and who is the ocean of transcendental mercy and the deliverer of the science of Krishna. Next verse, beginning with Madhuryo Jola. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you, the personified energy of Sri Chaitanya's mercy, who deliver devotional service, which is enriched with conjugal love of Radha and Krishna, coming exactly in the line of revelation of Srila Rupa Goswami. And the last verse of the pranams, which are customarily offered not only today but by disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, is the Namaste Gauravani Shimurtaye Dinatharine Rupanuga Virudapa Siddhanta Dvantaharine. And this talks about his contribution to trying to remove Virodhi. Virodhi means that which is Virudha, an obstacle to what you're trying to do. So if you are trying to help someone in an emergency situation, the lifeguard, for instance, is trying to give someone the kiss of life. Okay? So give someone a male lifeguard, for instance, is trying to give the kiss of life to a dying woman. And the husband is standing by. And the husband comes and says, what are you doing? What are you doing? You can't do that. This is a public place. That's my wife there. How dare you? You see? And the man will say, the lifeguard will say, don't worry, I'm trying to save the wife of your life. The life of your wife. So the husband will say, you can't do this in public. He said, get your hands off her. You see? So this is a virudha. She's dying. This is the only way that she can be saved. But he's interrupting, thinking I'm doing this on the grounds of religious behavior, okay, and respectable morality. You see? Happened one time in Vrindavan. There was one of our devotees who was a doctor in the Vietnam War. You all know the story. He'd been shot in Vietnam and put on a pile of dead bodies. And 48 hours later, he heard a voice way, way off saying, "Hey, Sarge, this one's moving." And he was recovered, and he discovered that, actually, I think I'm having a second chance here. I was dead, and now I'm alive. I've been saved, and I must have been saved by God, because it certainly wasn't the American army who helped me very much. I was just in a pile of dead bodies. So he went on to become a Prabhupada disciple and used his doctor's qualifications one time in Vrindavan to save the life of a widow who had collapsed in the street. So he provoked a little bit of concern as to what he was doing in a Vrindavan street. But nonetheless, he saved her life, and she was particularly grateful. Anyway, a little digression story. So virudha is that which gets in the way of saving the person. So when a philosophy which stops people become Krishna conscious is there, it is the business of the acharya to help people to go around that or to defeat it with his word. So this verse is about that. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you, who are the personified teachings of Lord Chaitanya. You are the deliverer of the fallen souls. You do not tolerate any statement which is against the teachings of devotional service enunciated by Srila Rupa Goswami. Okay, so those are nice verses, and you will all be called upon to say those verses at 9 o'clock, which is in 45 minutes, so you don't have too long. So please hold them in your minds. We will be saying them again as we do Pushpanjali. Look, I know that most of you are... How many times have you been to a class about Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur? Who's been to three? Who's never been to a class about Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur? Okay. Who's been to four? Who's been to five? Okay, we're getting at the veterans section out here. Some of them are going to have medals, campaign medals, you know. They usually are, for some reason, they usually ask, they roll me out for these classes, but I usually end up working according to script. Today I'll try not to work according to script. I'll say a few more things that perhaps I haven't said before. But for those of you who have never been to one of these classes, the reason why we talk about him, Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokula Nanda Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Shri Shri Gaura Nitai Ki Jai. The reason we talk about him is that along with our A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, whose form is sitting here at the end of our temple here, gazing upon the deities of the Lord, he is the person who was born in 1874, and we have him to thank basically for the entire Hare Krishna movement all around the world. Were it not for him, the very enterprise which Prabhupada continued to develop and brought to the West and transposed from rural Bengal and rural Uttar Pradesh would not have thrived in the way that it has done. Sometimes we look at our Krishna consciousness movement in slow motion, don't we? We look at it and we think, oh, you know, it's, you know, ISKCON's like this and ISKCON's like that, and we have this problem over here, and this guru did this and this sannyasi did this. And it's really a sort of micro chronological view of the spreading of a Krishna consciousness movement, or the spreading of any movement. But history doesn't do that. History concertinas time, rather like Govinda Prabhu's, you know, accordion. It takes time like this, and it just goes. It just squeezes things up, you know. The bad news is that none of us will be remembered. And you know what? None of the problems in ISKCON will be remembered. Nobody will talk about sannyasis who did this and gurus who did this. It will be a footnote in history. What they will remember is that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was the glorious son of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada took this movement to the West. And then, in the year 2045, such and such happened, or such and such was born. That's how history of the next century will record what happened. And we will all be squeezed to oblivion. And that's okay, because we are just very small items. But sometimes we may be tempted to think that, oh, this movement is going at a glacial pace. It's moving so slowly. You know, every year or so we get one or two people who come to Krishna consciousness. And, you know, why is it so slow? Well, the point is it's actually extremely fast. It's actually extremely fast. And one historian, A.L. Basham, Professor Basham, said, he said it never before since the days of the Roman Empire has a religious movement spread as fast as this Hare Krishna movement, this ISKCON. If you think about it, in 12 years, to go to all the major continents, to go to a huge list of cities, and if you count the number of places, and you know, you could generously say that Prabhupada disappeared and there was 108 centers, but now we're up to about 950. If you really count the places where people group together for the chanting of the holy name regularly, including Norwich. Let's not forget Norwich. We must never, ever forget Norwich. If you're watching, good morning. And wherever you're watching, and Bristol, let us not forget Bristol. From wherever you're watching, these are centers of Krishna consciousness. Why? Because one time Jamuna Devi, who recently passed away, she wanted to start a ladies' ashram because she just couldn't seem to get the facility to practice Krishna consciousness in the way that she and other friends wanted to in the local ISKCON brackets, brahmachari, closed brackets, temple. And Prabhupada said, "This, that's all right, you may start a ladies' ashram." She said, "But Prabhupada, will it be ISKCON?" And Prabhupada said, "Wherever you are chanting Hare Krishna, that's ISKCON." So 950 centers is not bad, is it? It's not bad. And, you know, the way it happens is that it happens like, you know, once there was a king and a sadhu, and they asked the sadhu, "Look, you've done something good for me. What do you want? I've got a bag of gold, or I've got some, you know, something else." He said, "No," the sadhu said, "I only want, you know, beware of sadhus who come to you, if you happen to be a king, and say, 'I only want something small.'" You know, the last time that happened, he said, "I only want 3 steps of land. That's all." Yeah, right. So the sadhu said, "No, I give me a chessboard. Give me a chessboard." He said, "All I want is that you take one grain of rice." And he put one grain of rice on the first square out of the 64 squares of the chessboard. And he said, and the king said, "Yeah, okay, I can do that." He said, "Well, in the second square you put 2. And in the third square you put 4. And the king said, "Is that all you want?" He said, "Yep, that's all I want." But he was very clever, you see. Very clever, these sadhus. Very devious as well. So by the time they got to the end of the chessboard, the king was not able to, even with his entire kingdom, give the sadhu all the grains that he wanted. So he had to give his entire kingdom, which he wouldn't have done in the beginning. So the sadhu was very clever. So it's called exponential growth rate. If you're a businessman, exponential growth rate. If every center of Krishna consciousness takes it upon itself to start 2 centers, which means that every single person sitting in this room, by the end of this year, please, if you can make two people Krishna conscious, that's all. That's all I'm asking. If you can make two people Krishna conscious, and you tell each of those two people to make two people Krishna conscious, then we shall have an exponential growth rate. And whatever this person did or that person did, it will not matter. Because there will be a plavan, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur called it, a flood, you see. So in effect, that's what Prabhupada did. Prabhupada took people from just being interested in Krishna consciousness to making a commitment. One time Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was standing on a roof and his disciple pointed to a nice young man that they hoped was going to become a brahmachari. And he said, Guru Maharaj, you see this person? He said, he's a nice young man. He most likely he will become a brahmachari. And Bhaktisiddhanta said, most likely. He said, there will be, between the harvest and the godown, anything can happen. Godown is the place where they store, you know, the rice. And the rice field is where they pick the rice. So he said, between the rice field and the rice storage house, he said, anything can happen. So it's the business of the acharya not just to sow the seeds, but to take in the harvest. And then to take that harvest and replant it. And this is what both Prabhupadas meant by propagation. Propagation means don't be satisfied with rice. You have to replant the rice so that it grows again. Don't be like Monsanto. You can buy rice from Monsanto, which is genetically modified. Thank you very much, Monsanto. Demons. To take the rice, and it will produce neutral seed, which cannot grow again. So you have to go to the, it'll grow without the need of so much fertilizer, so you save money. But each time you want to buy rice again, you have to go to this wonderful American company. And unfortunately, if your harvest fails, you have no money, and you have no money to buy future rice. And in India now, thousands of farmers have died as a result of this. It's terrible. It is real Kali Yuga. Real Kali Yuga brains, to build in profit, even to the genetics, to override the arrangement of God in growing natural food, to override that arrangement. So therefore the acharyas have to speak very strongly about demons. Therefore Prabhupada used this word, demons. He said there's a divine person and there's a demoniac person. And sometimes an acharya like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati is criticized of being too harsh. Even we have, according to his commentary, in 1.2.1.2.3 of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he described why the Tridandi sannyas danda, which is shaped, is unique. It's a unique shape. It doesn't come from anywhere except from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. The dandas that our ISKCON sannyasis have. They have four sticks instead of three, and they have the curved stick. And he described that this curved stick is like an axe. It's like an axe. So these sannyasis are walking through the world like with a sort of, you know, the sort of like the fasces in ancient Rome. They got the bundle of sticks with the axe at the top to chop away the attachments and to chop away Mayavad. Philosophy, you see. It means something, folks. So this is a problem for some people who think that spiritual life should be all about peaceful people speaking to other peaceful people about peaceful things. When the ship is sinking, don't expect people to be peaceful. And don't expect the order to abandon ship to be peaceful. You know, and if you get in the way of saving someone's life, don't expect the nurse or the doctor to be, you know, give you a cup of tea. They'll pull you back, or the lifeguard will slap your face. Most times, when someone is drowning, when the lifeguard comes to save them, just to pull them out of the water, what happens? They struggle, because the lack of oxygen causes them to become deluded, and in their delusion, they attribute the cause of their oxygen starvation to be the lifeguard. So sometimes the person who's being saved will punch the lifeguard in the face. So before he does that, sometimes the lifeguard just has to punch them in the face. It gets very rough out there in the sea when you're drowning. So sometimes the lifeguard has to get very physical with the person in order to save them. So sometimes the words of the Acharya have to be very, very cutting. Very, very cutting. And that's one element of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He was known as the Simha Guru, the Lion Guru. Interestingly enough, he was the fourth son out of 10 sons. Hello. 10 incarnations. Fourth one is Nrsimhadev. Just a little bit of poetry I thought of last night. So here comes Bhaktivinoda Thakur's 10 sons. No, Kripamoya did not say that they were all avatars of Godhead. But the fourth one was known as the Simha Guru. The point is that even from his very early childhood, you know the stories. He was born in Jagannath Puri. When it came time for his, he was called Bimala Prasad. There's a story where Lord Shiva is dancing. There's a story where Lord Shiva is dancing, and his wife Parvati comes and says, "Why are you dancing?" He says, "Well, I've just taken the Vishnu Prasad." She said, "But did you not save any for me?" And he said, "Well, I'm sorry, I was in so much ecstasy to take Vishnu Prasad that there's none left." He said, "Oh, wait." He said, "I have some just underneath this fingernail, just a little piece." You know, husbands, try this on your wife. "Did you bring me a plate of maha?" "Well, no, actually, I ate it myself. I did bring you one, but I ate it." "But wait, I've got a little bit of chutney under this fingernail." See what your wife says. So Lord Shiva said this to his wife, and she was very grateful, ladies. So her name in this form is Bimala. So it is that when Vishnu Prasad comes from the altar of Jagannath, Bimala is given. So this Bimala Prasad is what you eat when you go to Jagannath Puri. Because every scrap of the food that has been offered to Lord Jagannath is first offered to Bimala Devi. So Jagannath, Bimala Devi, and then it's Bimala Devi Prasad. But it's actually Jagannath Prasad having passed through the appreciative gaze of Bimala Devi, the goddess. So that's what you eat when you go to Jagannath. So therefore, because Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the father of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, was on the senior management on the temple council. He was on the temple council of Jagannath Puri Temple, which is a very responsible place to be, feeding 10,000 people every day. So he had to make sure that all the money went to the right place and everything was being carried out according to the codes of worship in Jagannath Puri Temple. There had just been a government inspection. Occasionally we also get government inspections. Our Hare Krishna movement here has been investigated by Ofsted to make sure that our schools are running properly, right? We've been investigated by the Charity Commission to make sure that we're spending public money. And it's very interesting. I was telling someone the other day, the Charity Commission, which is the government department, which makes sure that charities like ours do the things that they're supposed to be doing, will just hold you to your own charity, the delineation of your charity. So our charity is based on the propagation of the religion and the establishment of the religion and practices of Krishna consciousness. That's how it's phrased. So this movement is about spreading the teachings, but also getting people to take it up. So every year, we get a letter from the Charity Commission asking us, "How have you been spreading Krishna consciousness this year?" And I'm the one who has to get to answer that question. And sometimes the government of the United Kingdom says to me, through this letter, "You have sold books and you have spread the teachings, but have you got people to take up Krishna consciousness practices?" You know, this is coming from a government department. Okay. And they actually asked the question, how many more people, like last year they asked me the question and it was a bit sweaty. They asked me, since 2009, how many people in 2010 actually took up your basic practices of Krishna consciousness? Can you give us the number, please? Because their job is to make sure that we're not just, oh, I don't know, you know, doing weddings and making lots of money and not spending it for the teaching and practice of Krishna consciousness. So we have to be able to show how many people, not only how many books we sold, but how many people got initiated. And this must be a very interesting thing for any organization like ours, that the government of the country is seriously interested in how many people are initiated. And where we will get a critical letter from Her Majesty's government if we're not initiating enough devotees. So similarly, Her Majesty's government has always been interested in the Jagannath Puri temple. And if you go to the government, the relevant government department, you will find that there is such a thing passed in the 1800s, I think it was 1840, 1850, called the Jagannath Puri Act. The Jagannath Puri Act, which was passed in the Houses of Parliament just down the road here, right, by the bank of the Thames. They actually had a debate, and it was called the Jagannath Puri Act. And that gave the government of this country, under Queen Victoria, the powers to enter into the Jagannath Puri temple and to count all the money and to count all the outfits. They were particularly interested in the outfits, okay? In the, how many outfits did Jagannath have? How much jewelry did he have? They're very interested in that part. And it's all described. So in this Jagannath Puri Act and in the ensuing report, you'll find, and the person who was in charge of making sure that everything was tallied up was none other than Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the father of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. So he took his job very seriously. And so when his son came, his son was known as Bimala Prasad. 6 months later, it was time for him to be giving Anna Prashna. And it just so happened that 6 months, it was the Rathiatra time. And then his wife, you know the story, Bhagavati Devi, took Bimala Prasad Dutta up on the Rath, and at the time when his little head was put at the feet of Jagannath, because of course she was the wife of the temple president, basically she had, you know, full access, and big garland, one of the big garlands from Jagannath Swami, came and fell around the neck of the baby boy, Haribo. And right there and then, he had grains given to him. And this was his Anna Prashna ceremony. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he'd arranged for kirtan to be done. Now, you know, it doesn't get much better than this, as the story goes, that the cart stopped right outside the house of Bhaktivinoda Thakur and would not move for 3 days. Sometimes it doesn't move for sort of, you know, 5 hours, or even 24 hours, did not move for 3 days. This was very unexpected. So throughout the 3 days, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he arranged for kirtan singers to be there. Now, unlike us who do kirtan for free, in that part of the world you can, you know, pay a few kirtan singers to be there and do not 24-hour kirtan, not 48-hour kirtan, but, how does it go? 72-hour kirtan? Okay. So that's what they did before the chariot moved down the road again. We have to move forward. You know, if you raise your hands in the air, please. And we say, I am an offender. I shall never eat mango ever again. Thank you. And as the person giving the class, I take that vow, that solemn vow that you've just made, I take that back. I have the power to do that. But this was the vow that knowingly Bhaktisiddhanta Bimala Prasad Dutta took, because one time he had not even taken a mango, but he wanted to eat a mango which was not offered. Now, of course, that raised the question for me. My Srila Prabhupada liked mangoes. He liked mangoes, and therefore we always offered him mangoes. And there's pictures of him eating mangoes and stories about him eating mangoes. Okay? And in my devious mind, I was always thinking, well, the spiritual master offers everything he receives to his spiritual master. So what happens to the mangoes? Because when our Srila Prabhupada offers to his guru the mangoes, he says, no, I cannot eat. That's a question that's never been answered for me. It's one of my unsolved mysteries. Don't worry about it. So, I would just like to say that my Srila Prabhupada eats mangoes, so therefore we can eat mangoes. So we move forward. And one thing I did discover, actually, was that not only was Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, Bimala Prasad Datta, when he was born, he was 11th in the line from the father of Narottam Das Thakur. So in his family tree, not only the spiritual family tree, not only the parampara, but the spiritual family tree, well, the Shiksha parampara, not the Diksha parampara, but the spiritual family tree, you can trace back to Narottam Das Thakur, which makes quite interesting, which I'd never known before. So he was initiated, I have to listen carefully to this, he was initiated into Harinam by his father at the age of 13, who came back from Puri, at that time they were living in Navadvip, with Tulsi beads, initiated him when he was 13. He was, previous to that, he had been given a Kurma mantra when he was 7. They'd been building a house in Navadvip and they found a deity or a shalagram of Kurma Dev. And his father gave him a mantra for that and taught him how to worship. So technically speaking, we have, it's just interesting. He was very good at maths and astrology. And his father started a printing press. And this is significant because in his life, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati took up the mission of his father to make the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu available in print. This was something relatively, I won't say, it wasn't new for India, because the British and the Germans had brought, the Germans invented the printing press, and they brought that to India, all around India. You'll find these ancient Heidelberg printing presses, you know, from the last century. Only since the 1960s and early 70s has India been even allowed, even the government has even allowed them to buy paper from other sources. They made their own paper, and it was always inferior quality paper. They made their own printing presses, and it was, well, they fixed them, and it wasn't particularly good. Now in India, extremely high quality printing. But in those days, even to get something printed was, you know, it was something very, very solid. And therefore, we find the emphasis in our movement on not only teaching, not only preaching, not only Harinam, but the printing press. And in fact, when you see the emblem of the organization that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur started, the Sri Chaitanya Mutt, later the Gaudiya Mutt, you will see a printing press. You'll see the drum and the cartel of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and then you'll see the printing press. And in all, he had 4 printing presses. And it's quite interesting that, you know, here we have Radha Krishna Sitaram, and here we have Srila Prabhupada. Well, in the Gaudiya mission, he had the deities at one end, and at the other end, he had the printing press. Well, because the guru's expansion is the printing press. One time, Srila Prabhupada was taken to an 80-foot-long printing press. I believe it was Kingsport Press, and they were printing. It was in Tennessee, in America, 70, 80-foot-long, big, big printing press. And they thought Prabhupada might be interested, and of course he was. And it was printing Bhagavad Gita. Okay, if I've got the details wrong. Anyway, there's Kingsport Printing Press. They printed more than 1 million Bhagavad Gitas at one point. It was the biggest ever printing of a book that they had done outside the Bible. You know, it astonished them. that we wanted a million Bhagavad Gitas. And and 76, I believe. And so Prabhupada came in front of the printing press and paid his dandavats. And the devotees, you know, Prabhupada's bowing down to a printing press. And Prabhupada stood up and he said, "This is Srila Vyasadeva." So the printing press, the ability to take the message of Srila Vyasadeva, this is the incarnation of Srila Vyasadeva. He went to a college, and at the age of 16, he started a group amongst his friends. English translation was the August Assembly. Not the month of August, but August means sober people. It was meant to be boys who were interested in discussing devotional literature. And he said they all had to be brahmacharis. So at 18, he went to Calcutta Sanskrit College and did very well. Bhaktivinoda Thakur had seen his tendency early on and cultivated that tendency. And they wanted him to do other things, but he said, "My life is for the single-minded cultivation of the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu." But then he was doing so brilliantly. He said that, "If I continue with my academic studies, great pressure will be put upon me to take up family life. But if I appear to be incompetent, then that will not be the case." So then he left that college. He did have a job. You can say it as a job. He worked for the king of Tripura, teaching his children Bengali and Sanskrit. And he did a very good job. And he also helped, as his father had done, to make sure that the king's finances were not subject to corruption. So the king was very grateful. So with the money that he saved the king, that was being siphoned off due to corruption, the king gave him a pension which lasted for a full 10 years, a full pension, which meant that he could get on and actually start what became the Hare Krishna movement. So it's very interesting that, the Battle of Kurukshetra could be fought, and Krishna praised Arjuna as being Dhananjaya, a winner of wealth, because it costs money to fight the Battle of Kurukshetra, and it costs money to start a Krishna consciousness movement. So often our legend is it that Prabhupada came, and he came with seven rupees or $7, or we tell the legend in different ways. Prabhupada started this movement with nothing, but not for long. After some time, he had disciples who were working. They were contributing. Then he had disciples who were out selling books, and they were contributing. And the point is that making financial contribution to a spiritual movement is not it's not counterproductive. There's a wealth can be used for spiritual ends. Just thought I'd make that point. At age 23, one consistent thing we find that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur he loved libraries. When he was in the king of Tripura's palace, they had an extensive library, so he was always studying. This is a consistent theme through his life as well. Looking for books, finding books, and using books to write his books. So this looking beyond his immediate provision of books to find other books that might be useful, this is a common theme. When he was 23, there was this whole business of finding Yogapith. His father had found the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and had built a house in Surabhi Kunj. This is the house of Bhaktivinoda Thakur that you, if you go there today, you will still find that place, and which is where Bhaktivinoda Thakur's remains were laid to rest. You will find that building there by the side of the Jalangi. So in Navadvip, we begin to see the development of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's lifetime mission. First, he was encouraged by Jagannath Das Babaji, who at that time was about 104 and who was blind. He wasn't blind, actually, but his eyelids, there was no strength. He had no physical strength, and his eyelids fell over his eyes. And if he wanted to see something, Vasudev, his servant, had to pull his eyelids up. And he was carried everywhere in a basket. But when Bhaktivinoda Thakura took him to Yogapit, which at that time was a Muslim village, it was a Muslim village with a big patch of tulsi. And every time the local Muslims tried to cut down the tulsi in order to, build something, they would start to violently shake and vomit. So no one touched that patch of tulsi. They thought it was haunted or something. So when he went to that, he jumped in the air. He said, Gauranga Janmabhumi, this is the place where the Lord was born. So then after he did that, Bhaktivinoda Thakura said that I will go door to door personally and I will beg a rupee from every gentleman so that I have a place worthy of Gauranga in this Yogapit. So after that, he built a very nice house. So when the news of the discovery of Gauranga Janmabhumi reached Vrindavan, there was one elderly sadhu in Vrindavan who just had to come back to Navadvip to see it, and his name was Gaura Kishore Das Babaji. Now, he used to travel from Navadvip to Vrindavan and back, as many people did in those days. So that's why you'll find you'll find Manipuris there, you'll find Bengalis there. There was a great traffic between Mayapur and Vrindavan, but without the Rajdhani Express as we have today, they would have to walk. So Siddhanta Saraswati, who at this time was no longer known as Bimala Prasad. It's interesting, in Indian culture, you can change your name according to, the things that you've done. You know, sometimes it's only celebrities, actors, and people who go on stage that change their name. Oh, his real name is such, but his stage name, well, or when you do it, it's a nickname. But in Bengali society of the day, Indian society, that names were given as a result of your learning or as a result of your unique contribution. So Siddhanta Saraswati was because of his unique learning. Interestingly enough, from an early age, he didn't call his father father. He didn't call Bhaktivinoda Thakura his father because their relationship was like disciple and guru. But he would call his father Thakur Mahashay. Thakur Mahashay. This is how he would speak to his father. So the relationship was Guru Shishya. And later on, this was to give a few problems with his brother, Lalit Prasad. Lalit Prasad was given sort of a set of teachings by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. But Siddhanta Saraswati was given a slightly different emphasis by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And it's interesting, actually, that you have two different movements. You know, there's two different Hare Krishna movements coming from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. We don't know anything about the other movement, or we do if we go to Bengal. But there's another movement going on. Just like there's a movement that's bigger than our Hare Krishna movement. There's a movement that's much bigger than ISKCON, but everybody speaks Bengali, so you'll never find out much about it until you go to Bengal. And it's the followers of Advaita Acharya. But it's a much bigger Hare Krishna movement than ours. It's just, it'll never move out of Bengal. It's locked tight into the language and the lifestyle. But that's okay. We don't have to concern ourselves here. So Lalit Prasad Thakur was one way, and Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur. He wasn't Bhakti at the moment, he was Siddhanta Saraswati. But when he was 26, he met Gaura Kishore Das Babaji for the first time. Now, Gaura Kishore Das Babaji had a few items that had been given to him by his guru. And his guru was who? It's a trick question, you know, it's a trick question. His guru was Bhagavat Das Babaji. And you look at our parampara and you think, oh, which one is Bhagavat Das? Where does he figure in our list of 32 in the Bhagavad Gita? Well, if you come to the Spiritual Master and Disciple course, you will hear about these things. So Bhagavat Das Babaji had given him a tiger skin cap, you know, chupa, not a chupa. Kippa, tiger skin, and a basket with some lengths of rope with knots for chanting, a tilak stamp which had Hare Krishna written on it in Bengali. You put it and you can stamp it on your body like this, and some items for doing puja, like a ghee lamp and various things like that. And so immediately he met Siddhanta Saraswati. He gave him a tiger skin cap. Where that is now, we don't know, but he gave it to him. And he gave him the basket with some items. So he also carried with him two books, which he said were the essential books for anyone who wants to develop love of God. One time, someone came to Gaurakishore Das Babaji and said, Thakur Maharshai, how can I develop love of God? He said, love of God will cost you 5 rupees. That's all. You can get love of God for 5 rupees. You go into the marketplace, you can buy it. He said, oh, how can I buy it for 5 rupees? He said, you get 2 books. You'll see how much a rupee was worth then. You could buy 2 books for 5 rupees. He said, you get both by Narottam Das Thakur, you get the Prarthana and the Prema Bhakti Chandrika. Anyway, so Gaurakishore Das Babaji gave him some items and taught him. And then, although Siddhanta Saraswati, Bimala Prasad had been given the Hare Krishna mantra already at the age of 13, he'd already been given the Kurma Gayatri. Okay? So now, his father is saying, no, now you must become initiated. You say that to an ISKCON devotee. Initiation means when you get given the Hare Krishna mantra. We call that diksha. But in those days, diksha was when you got diksha mantras. Harinam was not considered to be diksha. The word is used for pancharatric gayatris and Vedic gayatris. So he said, you must take initiation from Gaurakishore Das Babaji. And there was some discussion because Siddhanta Saraswati was very learned and Gaurakishore he could not read and write. So then eventually he said, well, no, if you don't become initiated by this great devotee, don't come back to this house. So this wasn't just his father speaking. That would have been bad enough in Indian culture if your father says, don't come back to the house. That is a terrible thing to say. This was also his guru speaking. You know, you don't have to see me again. If you don't take initiation from him, you don't have to see me ever again. So then he went and he asked Gaurakishore, please initiate me. He said, I don't have any disciples. No, but my father said this, I must, please, I beg you. So a few times it went on. He said, all right, I will, when I next speak to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I will ask him and I'll see what he says. So the next time he saw him, he said, what did he say? What did he say? He said, I forgot to ask. He said, look, if you don't initiate me, he said, I'm going to jump in the river. Going to jump in the river. He said, all right. So he initiated him. And he gave him this name, Sri Barshabhanavi Devi Daita Das, servant of the lover of Radharani. So then, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, oh dear, I'm going to speed through. Bhaktivinoda Thakur and his son, Siddhanta Saraswati, they went on tour. Wonderful thing to go on tour with your son, to take him to the places of pilgrimage. They went to Kashi, they went to Gaya, they went to Puri, and it took him to all these different places. And he used the information later on to write his commentaries for the Chaitanya Charitamrita. We definitely want to finish at 9 o'clock, right? We have to finish at 9? Who's in charge here? It's you, isn't it? You are now the temple president. Can we go 9:15? Is that all right? Is that okay? Is everybody all right with 9:15? Okay. That wasn't a deafening yes, but it was enough. Thank you. So at this time, Bhaktivinod was asking his son to start giving talks. And he gave not only erudite talks, but very convincing talks, in which everything followed in a logical sequence, very unlike mine. No digressions. And he would make the points very forcefully, backed up by Shastra. And one of the sitters in the audience was someone who was a friend of Bhaktivinod, called Radha Charan Das Babaji. And this Radha Charan Das Babaji was a popular figure of the day, and he'd introduced a mantra, a song. And there were thousands of people. It really caught on like wildfire, because it was, you know, it was poetry. If you say something that's clever poetry, then people kind of like to sing a song. It was like a jingle. Nitai Gaur Radhe Shyam. Okay, and Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati later said, if you ever hear someone say that, put your hands over your ears and go, Vishnu, 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 Vishnu. And if ever a Harinam party that was singing this came by one of their temples, all the devotees in the temple would go out and they would bang gongs so loudly that none of them could hear that mantra. Bhaktivinod said, you have given this nonsense mantra all over Bengal. He said, this mantra is rasabasa, and it is offensive. And so he was, so Radha Charan Das Babaji, they sort of fell out. He introduced that mantra, and he'd also introduced a practice known as Shaki Vesh. Shaki Vesh means that a male practitioner would dress in order to stimulate his inner mood as a servant of Krishna, a feminine servant of Krishna. He would dress in a sari. So you had these male devotees dressing in saris, and some were very enthusiastic about it. So they would have the long hair, they would have bangles. And one day I went on a morning walk with Srila Prabhupada here, and we had one of his disciples who had gone to Bengal, and he'd come back from Bengal, and he was standing, and he had hair down to his